Hi, I'm Dan Webster, film critic for Spokane Public Radio and blogger for Spokane7.com.
And I'm Mary Pat Truthart, part-time film critic, full-time law professor at Gonzaga University School of Law.
And I'm Nathan Weinbender, also a film critic for Spokane Public Radio.
And welcome to Movies 101, the show that takes every opportunity to show just how much we love movies, even if sometimes we don't act like it. But that's the problem with art appreciation, right? Everybody's a critic. Speaking of opportunities, though, we're going to address two movies that explore blatant examples of opportunism, good, bad, and in between. First up is Elvis, Baz Luhrmann's study of the life and career of the late King of Rock and Roll. We'll follow that with a look at Hustle, which features Adam Sandler cast as an NBA sports scout struggling to find the next big thing. Let's begin this week's show by heading back to the mid-1950s. It's a debate that likely will never be resolved. Would Elvis Presley have become the so-called King of Rock and Roll without the support of the man known as Colonel Tom Parker? I say known as because Parker was actually a Dutch émigré named Andreas Cornelius Dries van Kluyk. An illegal émigré, I hasten to add, which becomes an important aspect to Baz Luhrmann's biopic titled simply Elvis. Parker, who quote-unquote discovered Presley, is portrayed in the film by Tom Hanks, and it is he who narrates the film, which plays with chronology, portraying Elvis's birth and then youth in Tupelo, Mississippi, keying on his interest and then obsession with African-American music, and everything that follows. Parker isn't exactly a reliable narrator, which the film makes clear, as a lot of what he says doesn't jibe with what we see occur on screen. Example, the main reason why he sabotages Presley's desire to do international touring is because he doesn't have a passport. What we do see, though, is largely energetic, fueled by an impassioned lead performance by Austin Butler and by Luhrmann's ability to portray some of the best of mid-20th century rock music.
Well, and Elvis Presley's precipitous rise and precipitous fall is sort of like the quintessential rock and roll rags to riches to rags narrative. It follows that bell curve that we've come to expect in the Star is Born kind of blueprint.
Right.
And of course, Elvis at one point was in talks to co-star with Barbra Streisand in the remake of Star is Born, which they do talk about in this film, Elvis. And this is also the quintessential Baz Luhrmann movie. I mean, it even follows the blueprint that we've come to expect from him, which is an opening hour that is just addled beyond belief, mm-hmm. where the first hour of this movie is basically one long montage, and he throws every trick in the book at us. We get on-screen graphics and animation and weird scene transitions, and the camera's flipping upside down.
Yeah.
And there's not a shot that Baz Luhrmann can't think up that he can basically put in a Cuisinart and give us five different angles of the same image.
I kept thinking all through that first hour, I said, you know, I don't know if this is very good, but boy, it sure is entertaining.
Well, I mean, and it moves, and I think that it's an interesting choice to have Parker be, as you said, the narrator here, because
he's the antagonist.
He's the antagonist, but he's engaging in a kind of myth making that has kind of defined Elvis ever since he broke out. He is this almost mythic figure, and so that's why I think his death hit America so hard, because we saw that he was a vulnerable human who just had these people surrounding him, these yes men and you know, people pushing drugs on him and all of that stuff. And I said quintessential Baz Luhrmann movie because we get all of this stuff. And then the last hour of Elvis is a pretty conventional biopic as far as these things go. And I was thinking back to I think it was his last feature film, which was the adaptation of The Great Gatsby, which mm-hmm. has a very similar layout where you just get this rush of images and music and deliberate anachronisms. And then the movie eventually kind of settles into a pretty traditional narrative. I sort of wish that it had kept up its insane energy to the very end, because I think it does kind of bog itself down in what feels like almost a Wikipedia-like walk through Elvis's career. But I found myself enjoying this more than I thought I would. I agree with you that Austin Butler is good as Elvis. I was watching him perform, and I think this movie is best in its performance moments where we actually see Elvis on stage engaging with audiences. And I was thinking, wow, this guy is doing a really good job. But then I was thinking, is it really that impressive that someone can embody Elvis Presley anymore? Because we've all seen Elvis impersonators, yes. I'm sure, who do as good, if not a better job.
And all been to Elvis weddings.
Yes, that's true. And I think that he's good in the scenes in between, though, capturing who this guy really was and the hangups he had and the problems that he eventually had and, you know, his relationship with his mother that defined a lot of his life. So, yeah,
And his father.
And so I was surprised by this, not because it operates outside Baz Luhrmann's wheelhouse, because it's 100% firmly within his wheelhouse. But I was expected to be kind of annoyed by this movie at the beginning. And then I found myself wishing it had been even more extra,
over the top,
as the kids say.
Well, Elvis, part of the issue for me is, did it need to be this long given the second half trips into this more traditional biopic? So I think that I would have been fine if they had sort of, you know, reduced that aspect.
Because it's like 2 hours, 40 minutes,
yeah,
something like that. Yeah.
Also, I wasn't sure about the choice to use Colonel Parker as the narrator, but apparently Elvis's family, so his ex-wife, his daughter, his granddaughter, who was not alive, Lisa Marie was barely alive, seemed fine with, you know, how everything was portrayed. But I think mainly, like many of us, they fell in love with Austin Butler. I mean, there have been several portrayals, some comedic, some serious, of Elvis in the past. I mean, I'm thinking of Kurt Russell, mm-hmm, in particular. But
come on, Andy Kaufman. His whole comic routine was superb. It was the best Elvis impersonation
or,
ever.
Jack White as Elvis in Walk Hard.
Right.
Which there were moments in this that reminded me of Walk Hard, and I don't think they were intended to be. But
no, I don't think so either. So then you have to ask, so did they frame the story around Colonel Parker because Tom Hanks signed on? And I've been trying to get a little bit more information about how that played out, because I'm actually a little annoyed with the fact that if you're going to present somebody who has a completely different incarnation from the original character, is it okay to put people in fat suits? Is it okay, mm-hmm, to do this? I mean, I don't know about that. I mean, I think that there were some other options, but of course, none of them had the star power of Tom Hanks. I just want to say that, you know, I've read a couple of things, and I think it was Owen Gleiberman or somebody who said, well, you know, Austin Butler was just not a beautiful boy like Elvis was. And
no,
I'm like,
that's not true.
Let's take a survey on that count.
Also, there are moments in Elvis where his head is at a certain angle, and he gets like this kind of smirk on his face where he looks so eerily like Elvis that I thought, are they using archival footage? I mean, he's not.
It's only they, you know, do that at the end, but yeah.
Yeah, well, and there are moments here and there where you can see that some of the archival footage they're using in this rush of montages, you get little glimpses of the real Elvis and like old newsreel footage and stuff like that. But yeah, it isn't until the very end, when which biopics are wont to do,
yeah,
when they show the real footage of the person.
Well, and it sounds like
that smacks of Spielberg, you know, throw in the real the end, you know.
Well, and it sounds as though Austin Butler really, really worked to make this part his own in a way, from just doing an imitation or a mimicry.
Yeah.
And he actually acknowledged the fact that because this production was made during COVID, as a matter of fact, Tom Hanks and Rita Wilson got COVID in Australia when this movie was being filmed. But he said actually having the extra 6 months to sort of let everything percolate, he thought, benefited his performance. And I remember seeing him in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Yeah, he's Tex Watson.
And he is one of these people that the camera loves. Mm-hmm. And I thought, you know, for that alone, it was good. And for me, who has sort of a kaleidoscopic brain anyway, I liked the montage thing. I loved the revival scenes and the music scenes in particular. We haven't talked a whole lot about that. The influence, I mean, you did in your intro.
Right. And let's face it, one of the things that Luhrmann does really well is show the influences that shaped Elvis and his early music. That's a part of the story that is almost always ignored. And, you know, you could say, well, you know, that's just a salve to PC thinking. And no, it's actually representing a truth that is all too conveniently ignored.
Well, it's either ignored, this idea that Elvis took traditional blues and R&B, gospel, black music and made it palatable for white audiences in the 1950s and was getting played on radio in ways that black artists weren't at the time. It's either overlooked or it's the entire focus. Mm-hmm. There's been lots of criticisms of Elvis and sort of what he represents over the years that I think this movie touches on just enough. They show his influences and they show how he was kind of rubbing elbows with Sister Rosetta Tharpe and B.B. King and Little Richard. So we do see that he was influenced by these people.
And he was paying praise to Mahalia Jackson,
yeah,
among others.
Yeah, but yeah, and going back to the music, I mean, I love Elvis's music. I grew up with it and I never get tired of hearing the songs. I think what this movie gets right about Elvis as a performer is that I think we think of Elvis as a kind of a stoic, symbolic figure. And what we forget is that he had a lot of fun as a performer. He was always like throwing jokes and puns into the lyrics and kind of having these almost like sly asides with the audience. And I think Austin Butler captures that. There's like
Especially a wry little pinky finger. Yes.
You know, there's a wry spirit to him as a performer that I think he captures.
Well, and of course, people may notice that we haven't really talked about Elvis in his movies. Oh, and yeah. I think that's okay.
Yeah.
No. Follow That Dream. I saw it at the drive-in as a kid, and I loved that movie. Follow That Dream.
Have you seen it since the drive-in?
No, but I imagine—
You should probably keep it that way.
No. I want to go back and see it because I probably will love it just for nostalgia's sake as much as I did then. At any rate, that was our discussion of the Baz Luhrmann biopic Elvis. This is Movies 101. It's time to take a short break. Before we go, remember that you can access podcasts of Movies 101 by going online at SpokanePublicRadio.org. While there, check out the individual reviews that Nathan and I write. Don't do it now, though, because we'll be right back to look at the Adam Sandler sports flick, Hustle. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
Subscribe to your favorite public radio programs when you become a Spokane Public Radio sustainer, just like any news or entertainment service you use. But unlike those other services, you decide how much you want to pay. Set up an electronic funds transfer, and monthly installments will be withdrawn automatically from your account. Plus, you can start or stop your subscription anytime you want. As a sustainer, you help make your public radio station strong. You support your favorite programs, and you never have to wonder when to renew. You're part of the community that sustains public radio. Call 509-328-5729 during business hours or go online to SpokanePublicRadio.org. Click the red donate button and start the process. Working together, we make our community a better place to work, play, and listen.
And we're back. This is Movies 101, and I'm your host, Dan Webster. During the first half of the show, Mary Pat Truthart, Nathan Weinbinder, and I discussed Baz Luhrmann's Elvis. Let's now move to the Netflix feature, Hustle. We've come to know Adam Sandler for his comedy, which, with movies such as Happy Gilmore, The Wedding Singer, and 51st Dates, just to name a few, offers a mostly puerile worldview. But on occasion, too, Sandler has appeared in more adult productions. Paul Thomas Anderson's Punch Drunk Love, Noah Baumbach's The Meyerowitz Stories, and most notably, Uncut Gems. His latest film, the Netflix offering Hustle, is closer to comedy than drama, but it does feature a mostly tamped-down version of Sandler. He plays Stanley Sugarman, a scout for the NBA's Philadelphia Sixers, who, desperate to become a coach, finds a talented Spanish street hoopster, played by real-life Utah Jazz player Juancho Hernan Gomez, and struggles to get him an NBA contract. Much of what director Jeremiah Zager gives us falls in the category of what Mary Pat describes, lovingly, as a cheesy sports flick. But despite its predictability, it has a number of charming moments, not just with Sandler, but with Hernan Gomez and with Queen Latifah as Stanley's understanding but no-nonsense wife. Cheesy Hustle may be, but I mean that in a good way.
I think it's difficult to try to remake the genre. And I appreciate the fact that in Hustle, they do that, but yet it elevates itself in some strange way, and I'm not exactly sure what all the parts are that made this work. Certainly, Hernan Gomez, and I don't know in terms of the production if they homed in on him early on, if they auditioned a bunch of people, because obviously this whole origin story could have been set in any country in the world. But the fact that they were able to find him, who is not a professional actor. I don't even remember seeing him doing any commercials. He was a real addition to this. And Adam Sandler, and I expect you to weigh in on this, Nathan, because you're a huge fan, especially of Uncut Gems. I mean, I'm very impressed by the trajectory of his career as well, because we knew what we were getting in some ways when he was focused on his comedic performances. But I think that he's really transitioned to being a multi-layered actor in so many ways.
Actor, producer. This guy is in charge of his own career.
Yeah, because the other thing that this film brings to it, you know, it does have a Philly sensibility about it. I think they could have introduced a little more Philly. There are montages of, you know, the pet steaks and, you know, so forth and so on.
There's only one person in this room who's lived in Philly, and that's the person talking.
Okay, exactly. So they could have infused a little bit more Philly into this whole production. But what really struck me about what was happening here are the relationships. And I think that that's an essential part of a cheesy sports movie. But this does strike a balance between the tough love and the hand-holding. So when do you kick somebody in the butt and when do you hold their hands? And that's a fine line there. Queen Latifah also I thought was very good. And Jordan Hall, we've seen in other things, good. So across the board, the performances were great. A pretty standard presentation, but there was enough other things going on that I think it made it worthwhile. And a bunch of NBA stars.
Yeah, let's give a shout out to Anthony Edwards of the Minnesota Timberwolves, who plays the antagonist of Bo Cruz, Hernan Gomez's
and
character.
I know so little about sports, including basketball, that I had heard Anthony Edwards was in this, and I thought about it was the guy from ER.
As did I, yes, yeah.
Well, and Top Gun, of course. Mm-hmm. R.I.P. Goose. But Hustle, I agree with you, is very predictable in all the ways that we expect. I mean, this is the same formula that made Rudy and Hoosiers and all of those films, which
Breaking
I think—
Breaking Away.
Yeah, and I agree with you. I think it's not the plot mechanics that make these movies work. It's the individual ingredients that you throw in there, the actors you choose, the relationships that you flesh out. And I think this one is pretty good. And there was a time not so long ago, and in fact, we may still be in this era, where Adam Sandler was one of the reasons not to go to a movie.
Mm-hmm.
If a new Adam Sandler movie came out, it was going to be painful
Little
Nicky, and terrible.
Let's see, come on. Yeah, right. Oh, yeah.
God. And so it's always great when he decides to actually try and give a performance, mm-hmm. because he has this quality about him that a lot of the great character actors have, where he sort of has this rumpled hangdog kind of charm about him, and you want to follow him. I mean, that's the reason Uncut Gems works as well as it does. I still think that he was stiffed by the Oscars. He should have been nominated that year.
He should have been nominated.
Yeah, and he probably should have won, but you know how I feel about that. I love that movie more than most, but I think that he could be the key to why Hustle works so well, because the movie is really resting on his shoulders, and the relationship he has with this young guy and the rapport that they have. I do think that it almost rests on the sports movie laurels too much, because the midpoint of this movie is, we talked about the first half of Elvis being nothing but a montage. The middle of Hustle is nothing but a montage. And the training montage, they throw a little Rocky in there too.
Yeah,
so you
yeah,
get a
yeah.
little
right.
more Philadelphia.
Yeah, yeah.
Where he's running up steps, not the same steps, but another set of steps. There's this training montage in the middle where he is just running this guy ragged, because he's like, this is the only way you're going to achieve your dreams is if you just bust your butt, right? And it goes on and on and on. And right when I thought, oh, the inspirational music is reaching its peak, we're done with it, there's another scene, and then they go back to another training montage. And I appreciate the sort of almost documentary-like realness of some of this movie, not just including all of these NBA players who, to be fair, I didn't recognize. It wasn't until the end credits where they started explaining who everyone was. I thought, oh, that guy was an NBA star too? Okay. Where you really do get the sense that this is the kind of training you have to do if you want to go into this arena, and it's going to take a lot of time, but I don't know if I necessarily needed to sit through all of it. So yeah, I think this could have been trimmed, because it's about 2 hours and I don't know if it needs to be.
Well, I think that a lot of people who would go see this movie are sports fans, and I think they would actually like that.
Probably, and they'll like all the Easter eggs, too, that I didn't catch.
Yes, exactly. I was impressed by that. I'm going to agree with you grudgingly that, yeah, it was probably a little bit too long, the training sequences. But I was impressed what they put this guy through. I thought, you know, you just go out and play hoops. No, no, man, he was having to run around and, you know, it was.
And they're throwing basketballs at him from every angle.
It was truly amazing. And, you know, to see this guy who's 6'9" be able to do all this, I was impressed.
Well, he is a superstar. The other thing that this film did, Hustle, sort of in a sly way, is took us into the backstory behind the business that the NBA has become. Yeah. And I thought they actually handled that pretty well.
And there was another kind of cliche there. Ben Foster.
Yeah,
as
I was
going to
say. Ben Foster, who is the son of Robert Duvall, who is the legacy owner of, the fictional legacy owner of the 76ers.
And he's the brother of Heidi Gardner.
Right.
You've got
a couple SNL people in here along with the NBA people.
Right, which is another aspect of, you have to think that Adam Sandler as a person is a good guy because he rewards his friends. He rewards loyalty. And if you're an SNL member and you're a friend of Adam Sandler, you're going to be in one of his movies somewhere.
You're set for life. Another thing about Hustle I wanted to point out is that we have all of these NBA players playing themselves or versions of themselves. There's all kinds of team logos everywhere. I would imagine that the NBA itself probably had to sign off on all of this.
Oh, yeah.
And probably, if they didn't get paid, they probably should have, because this is basically an ad for the NBA.
Oh, sure,
so let's not pretend
that
this is some kind of objective movie, right? It's definitely not. And maybe I would have liked it more if it were a little tougher, although they probably contractually couldn't be tougher. But another movie I would compare it to, a movie that I think is better than this one, is the Steven Soderbergh film High Flying Bird, which was also about NBA trading and sort of the politics of that.
And then we have Moneyball.
The 3D chess they have to play, and Moneyball too, which I think is also probably better than Hustle.
But I think this film in Spokane at this time, Hoop Town after all we are, is something that people should consider watching.
I agree.
And it's available
on
Netflix.
Yeah, and I think particularly it's an unfair example to compare this to Moneyball, which is a baseball movie and which is a superb film. Hustle is an enjoyable movie for sports fans right about now, as you say.
And I wanted to echo another thing you said, which is that I really liked Queen Latifah in this movie, and it reminded me that I haven't seen her in a movie in a long time, and I would like to see more of her. She's good in this.
She was in that television program, the remake of The Equalizer. That's what she's been working
on. Oh, I didn't even know that was a thing.
Yeah.
Thanks for the Queen Latifah update.
I'm the Queen Latifah expert. And that was Hustle. This is Movies 101. I'm Dan Webster, and early in the show, Nathan Weinbinder and Murpat Truthart and I discussed Elvis. Let's take this moment to thank Peter Glarberg for both producing and engineering the show, and we thank you to our loyal listeners. We invite you back next week, same time, same spot on the radio dial, when we'll again check out all the best that cinema has to offer, wherever we can find it. Until then, remember these words from the great Elvis himself. Ambition is a dream with a V8 engine. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
The Movies 101 podcast is made possible by the members of Spokane Public Radio. Become a member at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Thanks for listening to Movies 101.